If you'll turn in your Bibles to go ahead and go over to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10. We're going to begin in verse 5. It says, "These 12 Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, Go not into the way of the Gentiles, and into the city of the Samaritans enter ye not, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as ye go, preach, saying, The kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out devils, and freely ye have received, freely give." Now we saw the last time we were together that Jesus is sending his disciples out in pairs. It doesn't say here in this particular text that they're going out two by two, but over in the parallel passage to this text in Mark chapter 6, verse 7 tells us that he sent them out by twos. And we discussed last week the benefits of ministering together, whether it be two people, four people, or 40 people. When we do it together, there's a great advantage given to us that having people beside us with the same common objective, the same common desire to serve the Lord, same goals and this sort of thing. I'm not going to rehearse the things that we talked about, but there is a great benefit to serving as teams, okay? In this case, the objective is for them to go out, not just anywhere, but to go to the Jews. He says in verse 6, to go to the lost sheep of Israel. Now, this is a temporary command to go to the Jews. It's in no way implying that the Gentiles couldn't be saved, because if we look at the Great Commission later on in the book of Matthew in chapter 28, we'll see that the Great Commission says, go ye and teach all nations, okay? So that includes Jews, Gentiles, and all. Mark chapter 16 and verse 15 says, go ye into all the world. And even more specific than that, if you get over into Acts chapter 1, verse 8, it says that we are to be witnesses unto both in Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria and to the uttermost parts of the earth. So we know that this command is not saying that the Gentiles are not to be saved, because they are. But in this particular case, he wants his 12 disciples to go unto the Jews and the Jews alone, as he refers to them as the lost sheep of Israel. We can only speculate as to the reason for this. There are some things that we'll throw at you that perhaps are the reason. First of all, we know that the Jews were God's chosen people. We know that they have captured the heart of God, and God Israel will always be his people. And so it could be that he just beginning with them. Of course, we know he's going to expand on that and broaden that and go to the Gentiles with the gospel. But at this point, it's just simply his chosen people. And also, if he had began the ministry or the evangelism, if he had began going directly to the Gentiles, that might have been a stumbling block to the Jews and causing them to have to close their hearts to his message. In other words, the Jews had such a great disdain for the Gentiles, and they were aware of the heathen religions and the pagan belief systems that the Gentiles had. And so they likely, had Jesus gone straight to them with the gospel, they likely would have dismissed the gospel as just another pagan religion, just something else, belief system that the Gentiles had embraced, and perhaps would have even despised the disciples for going to the Gentiles, and of course turn their ears off to listening to them because they had ministered to Gentiles. And so that perhaps is part of it. Furthermore, you have to think about the fact that all of this is new to the disciples. This mission that they're going on here is their very first experience at evangelism, okay? So it would be hard enough for them to go out and go to their own people, but you can imagine the challenge it would have been had Jesus told them on their very first missionary journey to go out and try to reach the Gentiles. It would have been probably a great deal harder, okay? So it just makes sense that you have to crawl before you walk. Jesus sends them out to the Jews first. Ultimately, It wasn't until the Apostle Paul's ministry, the missionary to the Gentiles, it wasn't until his ministry, when he was saved and called, that the gospel was actually sent out to the outside world, outside of Palestine. You see, Jesus never left Palestine. And the disciples and their ministries in the early church before Paul was saved didn't go out outside of Palestine. So it was going to be a while before the message goes out to the Gentiles. But it does not mean that Gentiles could not be saved at this point. We know that lady at the well was a Samaritan. And it's very evident that she was saved that day when Jesus responded. He himself ministered to her. And then she left out of there and went and told a bunch of her friends. And she led them to come back to Jesus, implying that perhaps they believed and were saved. And so it's not to say that Gentiles could be saved at any time along the way. But it was just that the ministry going out to them, the evangelism, the missionary endeavors, had not yet taken place. Okay, this was just this mission here is a starting point. He's beginning with the Jews. Okay, ultimately, the whole outside world would be evangelized, and you and I are here tonight because of that. Okay, now I want you to notice the message that he tells them to take to the Jews. Verse 7 says preach saying the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Folks, one of the major problems with many of our attempts to evangelize people is that we simply don't make the message clear enough. We oftentimes throw things in there that are distracting from the central message of Jesus Christ, okay? We can start talking about secondary issues, denominations, Bible versions, baptism, behavior, lifestyle, church attendance, and all these things. And all of those things are important and need to be visited at some point. But the most important issue at all that has to be addressed is the subject of Jesus Christ and what he's done. And getting them saved. And when that primary message is understood, the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus and the need for forgiveness, realizing that he's the Son of God and accepting him, then when that's made clear and they'll have true salvation, and then you can take them to deal with the secondary issues and all those things can be worked out. But the kingdom of heaven at hand is essentially this. Jesus is available, and it's urgent that you respond to him. That's essentially what the message is. It's that simple terms. But Jesus is available, and it's urgent that you respond to him. It never ceases to amaze me how God arranges divine appointments for us. Just yesterday, ironically, it wasn't irony, it was God's work. I went into the office of one of our church members and was going to borrow her fax machine, and which I do periodically. And the minute I walked in, she had somebody in her office. She said, "You're just the person we needed to see." And she was witnessing to this fella. And he was throwing all kinds of hard stuff at her. And apparently she knew this guy because it appears that this has been an ongoing dialogue. But my point being is the fella was a real nice fella, claimed to be an atheist, but he knew his Bible. And so he's throwing things out about, and really politely, by the way, throwing things out about, okay, why did God do this in the Old Testament? Why did he have them go in and kill these pagans that were occupying the Promised Land? And why did Lot's two daughters, you know, essentially molest him while he was drunken and this sort of thing? Just all peripheral things, okay? What I try to do, you try to answer those to an extent, but you try to come back and zero in on Jesus, okay, the Son of God, and that's the most important thing, and that's what I tried to do, and I think we made some progress. He didn't accept the Lord, but he left there knowing the most important thing is what you do with Jesus, okay? It's necessary. We need to bring people back to that subject when we're witnessing and when we're dealing with people, who Jesus is, what he accomplished and why we need him. And that's the basics. That's the subject at hand, if you will. And the message of the kingdom of God, by definition, needs to talk about the king, okay? And king is Jesus, okay? So Jesus commands his disciples to go out with this message of salvation. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. But he also charges them, if you'll notice, with some actions that he wants them to take. And these are actions that are going to give credibility to them. It's going to give, if you will, substantiate the message that you're going to bring. We find this in verse 8. He says, heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out devils, freely have received and freely give. Now, these are things that Jesus has already done, okay? These are things that he has done both to bless people and substantiate or validate his ministry. But think about this. A doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, any other professional person, they have a degree, if you will, that they hang on their wall or they hang in their the waiting room or whatever, where people can see that lends credibility, if you will, that it certifies their qualifications. Perhaps they might even, as a doctor, give you a reference where you can check out their former work and what they've done, just legitimizing, if you will, their practices. And this is all done so people will know, hey, they're the real deal. They can be depended upon. Well, in a great way, in a similar way, the signs and the wonders that Jesus performed and that the disciples performed, and then later on the Apostle Paul performed in the book of Acts, those are things that would lend credibility or confirming the authority that they had to come and bring the message that they were bringing. And it starts here with the disciples, and then as we've already studied the book of Acts in depth for all those months, we saw it time and time again, the disciples' ministry or the apostles' ministry, Apostle Paul's and all the other apostles, that along the way they were doing these same things. They were performing these miracles, these signs and these wonders that would establish, if you will, or legitimize or lend credibility to the message, okay? And you have to think about the 12 disciples are going out at this point. They're nobodies, okay, in the eyes of people. They're not, they have no formal training. They're not part of the establishment, if you will, the establishment being the Jewish leadership, which would involve the Pharisees, Sadducees, the scribes, the priests, and all of that. They didn't have any involvement with that, any of those credentials. They were not rabbis or they were not aspiring to be rabbis. They were not Jewish teachers of any kind. They were just everyday Joes. So to go out and bring this message of the gospel, probably nobody's going to give them the time of day, right? But going out with the signs and wonders, it served as evidence of their being commissioned by God. Hey, I think I'll pay attention to this guy. He just healed a blind guy, okay? I think I can listen to him. He has the authority of God upon him, or he wouldn't be able to do this. And so that's the way that works. And and also, the miracles that are mentioned here in verse 8 that they were to go out and perform were also done in such a way that it not only lended to their authority or confirming their authority, but it also was done in a way that it revealed the nature and the character of God. The acts that they committed were redeeming acts. When you cast out a demon or you heal a sick person or you give sight to the blind, that's a redeeming, that's an act that brings something good to the life of that person. And when any person that's oppressed or afflicted and you give relief to that, that is nothing but revealing the nature of God, what he wants to do with the life, you see. And God didn't send them out to just do magic. Go out and do a disappearing act, if you will, or pull a rabbit out of a hat or levitate or something like that. He didn't do that. go out and do these things, be effective in ministering to people with these miracles. Each one of the miracles had a purpose, twofold. One, lend authority to the message, or to the disciples, and substantiating their message, and two, ministering to the people. And that's exactly what they did. God didn't give them the power to perform magic. He rather gave them power to represent Him here on earth by meeting practical needs and demonstrating, if you will, the sympathetic heart of God. When these guys extended sympathy and stopped and healed somebody in the name of God, that's revealing the nature of God and His sympathy. And folks, this was needed at that time, because the religious leaders of that day, which we've read so much about, primarily the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they were in stark contrast to this. They in their legalistic ways, presented God in a harsh, condemning way. Now, God is a God of wrath towards sin. Believe me, that's why Jesus had to die on the cross, okay? I understand all of that. But we also know that God is a merciful and compassionate God. And the Sadducees and the Pharisees did not lend toward helping people understand about grace and mercy and compassion and patience and forgiveness and all of this. They were condescending towards anybody who did not meet their standard and this sort of thing. And so this was a message that would have been a breath of fresh air to the people that the disciples were bringing this message to, okay? And so there you go. There's that. We'll start in verse 9 and next time we're together, and maybe we'll find a few more truths out as we meet, okay? Appreciate you guys, and let's go ahead and stand and be dismissed. Hope you ladies have a really good party on Friday night, and I hope that you'll plan on being at our Christmas party Sunday night. We're not going to keep you late. We'll get started at 6 o'clock, and you'll be able to get home in a timely manner, and we'll just have some good fellowship and some good food, okay? All right, good deal. David, will you lead us in prayer, please?